This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Alex Rodriguez, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Monday, April 11th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. Hope you all had a great weekend. We have a big week planned. We thank you for joining us. Beautiful day, a little bit of a chill in the air, but so what? You got a coat, got a sweater, put it on. How you guys doing?
Good. Good weekend. Fun. Kids got to see the Easter Bunny.
Yay!
Early arrival, though, right?
Say again?
Early arrival for the bunny.
Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, you get the bunny when you can. I mean, it's just, he's a busy guy. And got to see Paddington Gets in a Jam over at the Morristown Theater. So that was fun.
Always a good show.
That's a good show.
It's not gonna win a Tony, but they were entertained.
That's all that matters.
What was it called again?
Paddington Gets in a Jam.
Oh yeah,
you should involve like jam and like you know.
No, because you know I don't know if you follow the Paddington story arc, but he loves his marmalade, you know, jam sandwiches,
gotcha.
And he gets in all these jams, and he was over at Mr. Curry's house, and that's where it all went wrong.
The thing that I don't like, Don, is that you already decided they can't win a Tony. That's what I don't like.
Well, because I saw the show.
They don't like it either, Peter. They don't like it either.
But the kids loved it, and that's what it was about.
That's,
you know,
right.
I'm not sitting there taking notes. I'm just, no. You know, just trying to make sure that they, for the 50 minutes of the show, stay where they're supposed to be and don't wander off. But they didn't. They're right now in the Paddington zone. They love the movie. They love the show.
What did the children think of the K-Rod cast?
They were taking a bath.
Okay.
And I was taking notes.
You were taking notes?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Yes,
you know what?
When
you do something on this level for ESPN, you find out a lot of people take notes.
What do you mean?
Good. It's all good. I mean, there's one. I have one suggestion.
Go for it.
And it's not really even you, Michael. I thought you guys were sitting too close.
Really?
Yeah. Because again,
I'm not a creepo. You're a creepo.
No, I think because you'll want to be casual, and I've watched games with many. Many people, and I've never sat that close to anybody watching a game.
But if you're in a ballpark and you're sitting in seats, you're that close.
Yeah, but you weren't in a ballpark. They made it look like it was like the living room, and you guys are dressed casually watching a game. And I thought you were sitting a little too close. That's really my only critique.
If that's your only critique, you got to feel good about that.
Because that's fixable. But I don't think
they're going to move the seats, frankly. I don't know if it's fixable.
Well, here's why they might not, because they liked having you guys in the smaller box with the game big, which, by the way, was a much I thought the viewing experience for getting to watch you guys and the game was much better than the Manning cast. I thought that was really well done. But so they probably wouldn't want them further away because then they'd have to put them in separate boxes.
Right.
And then you lose the point of them being there together. To some degree.
Now, I don't know if you guys agree with me. And for those that don't know, you know, we started the K-Rod cast, which runs, you know, as a complementary aspect to the regular broadcast on ESPN. I thought the star of the broadcast was Roger Clemens. I mean, talk about a guy who I heard from people in baseball today, agents, who were raving about how Clemens came across. And there are people that were taking notes, Don, that are thinking about hiring him as a broadcaster. That's how good he was.
Yeah.
And because he when he was a pitcher, you know, he looked as a guy who was going to throw up and in. He always seemed angry. He's really a goofy dude, and he showed that side of himself. I think he humanized himself.
I was impressed, really, with the entire You know, all the interviews, I thought, you know, and the game was very compelling too, which helped, and you didn't get in the way of the game at all, so it wasn't like you interfered with it. So I was able to watch the game and enjoy the game and have fun with you guys. And I did something I'm sure you didn't do, Michael.
What's that?
I dove into the mentions. I wanted to see what people were thinking.
And what'd you get? I mean, I heard that it was much more positive than we expected it to be.
Much more positive. Not that I thought that you would fail, Michael. I just know how people get.
Also, A-Rod is somebody who's A-Rod, a lightning rod.
Right.
And I've never been a critical darling, so I wasn't expecting great reviews. And not that they were great, but they certainly weren't bad.
No, I thought they were very good. And the ones that were critical were just critical because they don't like you or they don't like A-Rod. Like, it was nothing specific. Like, oh, this is a waste of time. What a bore. Or it was just something like general. It wasn't like something specific you said or A-Rod said or the way it was shot or the way it was put together. It was just like criticism that comes from people that just don't like you or don't like A-Rod, and or that were maybe Red Sox fans who thought that it was, you know, pandering to the Yankee fan because it was a former Yankee and the Yankee announcer. Like, so it was just general stuff that you're not going to win those people over anyway. You could have done something that was the most spectacular thing in the history of television. They were going to pan it. But the people that were, like, really critiquing it, I think for the most part, everybody thought it was great.
I enjoyed it. I really did.
I mean, Peter was texting me during the game. He was really watching. I was stunned. But
I'm not going to lie. We were watching. I'm not going to lie. I did miss Clemens, though. I left there.
Oh,
for the
that's
middle.
A big
miss.
The best.
I know.
Part.
I'm going to go back.
You know who
I'm
else was good, Peter? Passan. Passan came on and just fired Scud missiles at me.
When Passan showed up and just hits you right with a big head joke.
Yeah, that was. I mean, it was gutsy and also lame at the same time.
Come on. No. You got to bring it, because you remember, Don, it's a new audience. So not everybody knows the Michael Big Head joke.
That is true.
You got to establish it. Now let's go back and hear Passan joining the show last night.
Now let's bring in our good friend Jeff Passan. As I mentioned earlier, the best at what he does. So Jeff, we're not going to ask you to scan the QR code. Who do you think is going to win the American League East?
Let me just say first, Michael, I'm really impressed with the technology on this broadcast. Somehow you're in a much smaller box on the left side than mine, and yet your head is somehow almost the exact same size. So very impressive job right there.
You know what?
Your sweater looks great.
What a bad guy. But I love him. We're actually thinking about making him joining us for an inning in each of the
game
podcasts. Because he's locked in. Everything happening in baseball. He'd be great.
No, he might as well.
He's going to puncture my balloon all the time, so it's good.
But what this can do, Peter, and I'm not blowing smoke, although everybody just accuses that I agree with everything Michael says.
You mostly disagree with everything
right, because people
say.
Who say that don't listen. But here's how – because I'll be honest with you, when you first told me about this, I was like, I'm happy for you, but like, how's it going to work? Because it's not like ESPN baseball doesn't do a football number. You know, you get some games that aren't going to be great, and so like, how much could it really ultimately do for a number? But then I watched it and saw that, you know, like last night's different because it's Yankees Red Sox. That speaks for itself. But not every Sunday night game is going to be a compelling matchup that the nation's going to be drawn into like Yankees Red Sox. And also, it may not be a great game. You know, what if it's 10-2 in the fifth inning and you still got four more innings to do? This could get people that normally would not watch Sunday night baseball to watch you.
It did.
Because that's what you're trying to win over, the Peters of the world, who, you know, they're not, I can guarantee you, Peter is not normally on an Easter Sunday going to sit there and watch Braves Padres.
Well, it's interesting you say
that.
That
may be different this Sunday.
Well, and my family has a real tradition with the Padres on Easter. So
you've always been like that.
I was just acknowledging that it's Easter Sunday, not that it has anything to do with you.
Oh, now, got it. Go ahead.
Here's my takeaway from it, and because – you know, I read some of the reviews and whatever, and there seems to be a take out there. Well, they're not doing enough play-by-play. And I was getting texts from important people.
I think you did too much, honestly.
Me too.
And here's my take, guys. If you want to do play-by-play, if you want to hear the play-by-play, go to Channel 36. That's what Carl and Eduardo and David are doing. This is an alternative. The game is on. At the end of the game, ninth inning, one run, we did play-by-play. But to disrupt interviews I think it's a mistake, but there are people in high places that think you got to do play-by-play. And you know, I was talking to Mike Green, and he gave me the perfect example.
Okay.
He did the 70th anniversary broadcast last week, and they had Oscar Robertson, they had Bill Walton, and they had Marv Albert, and he didn't do play-by-play at all. And what he did, which I think was smart, if you guys want to hear play-by-play of this broadcast, Ryan Rucco and UB Brown are doing it on ESPN. That solves it. And then, you know, I was looking through Twitter this morning. Why aren't these guys doing play-by-play? Do you know what this is? This is an alternative to the broadcast.
Yeah, that you can't worry about that. That's people don't get it.
And the difference between the Manning cast and this is that, you know, the pace is way different, right? The game is a little bit slower. There's a little bit more that you have to fill, and it's not like you guys are going to have something constantly to say. So sometimes the play-by-play kind of fills in the awkward silence of what's next. Well, you don't have that in football because football is like so fast-paced. Come out, especially when they're in the hurry up and the games aren't as long. That game was 3.5, almost 4 hours, typical Yankee Red Sox game.
Yep.
And, you know, so yeah, the play-by-play can sometimes be a little filler, but no, you're not looking to get play-by-play. First of all, you don't really need it that much because it's television. And also, you're probably watching for something other than the X's and O's of a baseball game. So I thought it was great. Good job.
Thank you. And one thing, that it's amazing the things that get attention. So Clemens got attention, which I understood. Passan's hit got attention, and the fact that I brought up J-Lo's engagement, we're on TMZ.
Oh yeah, of course.
The headline is Alex Rodriguez trolled over J-Lo Ben engagement during Yankees broadcast. First of all, it's not a Yankee broadcast. TMZ.
It's okay. Sunday Night Baseball. All right, let's calm down, Captain.
On TV.
Let's go back and hear what actually happened.
You know what's amazing, Alex? This is such a great time in sports. You have a new Masters champion. The NBA playoffs about to start. Baseball's in full swing. People getting engaged. I mean, it's a happy time in the world.
It's crazy. happiness and the world peace is what we're looking for.
You know what? I think of Gandhi and you. That's how I am.
The 2-1 pitch.
That was great.
Now, that was That's Alex good. Who said the 2-1 pitch.
Right.
I thought he handled it great.
Very
now, full
humanizing.
Disclosure, guys. Full disclosure. I would never have done that to him without running it by him before.
Of course.
I said, listen, would you be okay if I bring this up? Because, I mean, that's a really, probably a heartbreaking thing, right?
Yeah.
And he was cool with it. He said, yeah, sure.
I knew you brought it. The second I saw it, I laughed and said, You obviously discussed it because you would never do that to someone. And also, Alex gets the business. You know, he knows what to do. You got to do the business. And to not have brought that up, mm-hmm. it would be doing a disservice your first time out. That's Alex being a pro. Props
and
to him.
Peter, you asked for something for Miss Hatton, mm-hmm. and I have it right here. They actually have K-Rod swag, so I don't know if you have the return feed. But it's a black polo shirt with the K-Rod logo. I've never had swag, so this is kind of neat.
This is good. Well, you kind of
did. I love the logo. The logo.
You know, we had Michael K. Show t-shirts we never got.
Yeah.
We actually have some now. We probably we have a whole box we should probably be giving away.
But quickly, a lie was told, though, during the broadcast.
Tell me what?
I think it drives Roger crazy. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
Of course it does.
I don't buy that for a second.
That's why he got so animated, Don. That's why he got so animated. Of course it drives him nuts. His whole life revolved around making the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, new world record. By the way, everybody who watched K-Rod, thank you. It's very, very fun to do. A new world record is set today. I'm excited about it. You guys don't even know about it. I didn't know about it till 2 minutes ago. You ready?
Yes. Okay.
It's time for tonight's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea.
Wow.
How about that? Usually
we got a compliment.
Until 6 o'clock, but Aaron Boone is on it.
Oh, remind us to bring it up to him on Thursday.
Yeah, what's going on?
That's such a gift.
Third baseman leading off, DJ LeMahieu. First base, Anthony Rizzo batting second. Aaron Judge in right field hitting third. Cleaning up the DH, Giancarlo Stanton. Joey Gallo's in left field batting fifth. Batting sixth, playing second base, Gleyber Torres. The center fielder is Aaron Hicks. Catching And batting eighth, Kyle Higashioka. And the shortstop is Marwin Gonzalez. And he will bat ninth with Jameson Taillon getting the start. That's tonight's Yankee starting lineup against the Blue Jays, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Let's go around the bases, okay, because that's the big story of the weekend, and it's brought to you by Nissan. Mets take 3 out of 4 from the Nationals. The Yankees take 2 out of 3. Now, whenever you win a series but you don't win the final game, there's always going to be a level of disappointment. So we'll start with the Mets, guys. They're much better than the Nationals, and they did exactly what they should do, is take 3 out of 4. But I think both teams, the Yankees and the Mets, it was a case of, we're going to lose the battle in order to win the war. And you're going to see this throughout this entire month. Starters are not going to give you all that much length, although the Mets got decent length in their 4 starts. But you're going to have to employ the bullpen to a level that you're going to be uncomfortable with. And Buck did not want to use certain pitchers 3 out of 4 days. And Don, you watched the game. I don't think a lot of it was about the people that Buck brought in relief. Pete Alonso had a shaky game defensively.
Right.
But they ended up losing the game 4-2 in the bullpen. I guess you could say blew it. But for the most part, all things considered, it was a good weekend for the Mets.
Very good. I mean, you would like to go for the sweep. Do you realize if they had won that game, and they had a 2-1 lead going into the eighth inning, that would be the first time they had ever swept a 4-game series on the road against the Nationals / Expos in over 30 years. You have to go back to 1991. And they were all pretty much tight games. I thought the Mets hit situationally, but I think Alonso's taken a little bit of a step back defensively, and I think that cost especially Williams in the eighth inning.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But otherwise, I mean, May wasn't great, I guess, on opening night. But really, we're nitpicking here. They're hitting well. They're getting really good starting pitching. I was really impressed with Carrasco. So I think you got to be happy sitting there 3-1.
And it does beg one question. I mean, we're here to, like, you know, deal with the minutia, right? And it shows you that in a game that right now is all about numbers, it's really not all about numbers, because – you know, Alonso struggled at first base. Dominic Smith was in the lineup as the DH. Dominic Smith is clearly a better defensive first baseman than Pete Alonso. Mm-hmm. Buck Showalter knows that. The coaching staff knows that. But, Don and Peter, you don't do that because you don't want to tick off Pete Alonso, who fancies himself as a decent defensive first baseman. I'm not saying he's terrible, but Smith is better. But you make moves like that because it's about – the mental state of a player, too, not just about numbers.
And well, also, yeah, in an effort to protect your defense, you don't want to negatively impact your offensive numbers from one of your best offensive players.
Right. You don't want to get him in his headspace. You're
and
right.
Certainly not now. I mean, listen, it stunk that it happened yesterday, and the timing was, I mean, listen, you can blame the game on him if you want, but the fact of the matter is it's game 4 of the year. So let's take a little time here before you really over concern yourself with it.
Now was you know, you wonder, it's like managing egos, right? You don't want to embarrass Alonso, taking him out for defensive purposes. You don't want to maybe pinch hit for Cano. I know that was a bone of contention even during the broadcast in the fifth inning with a runner at second base in a 2-1 game. Could you have pinched hit for Cano there? But do you not do that in the fifth inning, Michael, because he's a veteran and you don't want that? I mean, is Buck maybe just trying to – listen, he's a new manager with the team, and maybe he's kind of just feeling his way here. As you said, it's early in the season. They won the first 3 games, off to a really good start. Nobody's running away with things. Phillies, Braves are all right there. And if it just means, you know, making everybody feel good and comfortable, is that the worst thing in the world?
No.
Now, do I think in a meaningful game late in the season in the playoffs, I would think Dom Smith would play first. I would think Cano would get pinched hit for. But right now in April, when you're just trying to get to know your veterans, guys you're going to need for the long haul, I don't have a problem with it.
Now, on the Yankee side, they take the first two against the Red Sox, but the way they had to play this series, through no fault of anybody's, just circumstance, their starters aren't giving them length. They use 7 relief pitchers on Friday. They use 6 relief pitchers on Saturday. 5 pitchers were unavailable yesterday because Aaron Boone and the organization doesn't believe in forcing people to pitch 3 days in a row. This is not sustainable. It's not. You cannot continue to get 5-plus innings out of the bullpen every single night. And now you're going up against a Blue Jay team. The offense is explosive, and you can't really realistically expect Jameson Taillon today to go to 95 pitches because this is his first start. So it looks like the Yankees are keeping them all around 70, 75. And when you're facing teams like the Red Sox and then the Blue Jays, the pitchers are going to have to work. You're not going to have 6-7 pitch innings. You're just not. So the bottom line is this. You're going to have to really lean on the bullpen. And that's why the Yankees are carrying 16 pitchers, 11 guys in the bullpen. But they lost yesterday because of a home run by Bobby Dalbec off Clark Schmidt. And although they like Clark Schmidt a lot, their highest leverage pitchers were not, I mean, they couldn't use Clay Holmes yesterday. They couldn't use Chad Green yesterday because they had used those guys. Now, they did use Loaisiga, but obviously the Dalbec home run made the difference. And then Jake Diekman probably had the greatest inning of his life, striking out Judge, Stanton, and Gallo to end the game. And the Red Sox don't have a closer. And when Alex Cora was asked about Diekman, he goes, oh, he's my closer tonight. So that's very fluid. But I will tell you, with the Blue Jays and their power bats coming into town starting tonight for a 4-game set, Don and Peter, it's not sustainable to get that many innings out of the bullpen. Something's going to break. Something's going to break, and somebody's going to break.
And as you've mentioned many times before, you know, now when that many pitchers are throwing, can you expect them all to be great? Is somebody going to have a bad inning? And that could be the difference between winning and losing a game. But it's April. I mean, I think we get all caught up, right? Because, you know, we're watching the NBA and the NHL regular season come to an end. The games being so meaningful, just came off of football. You don't want to throw games away, but it's about managing a long season. Both the Mets and Yankees expect to be there at the end of the season. And sometimes you've got to lose the battle, or maybe not lose it, compromise the battle to win the eventual war. So I know Yankees, Blue Jays, Michael, Yankees, Red Sox, it's a big deal because these are rivals, these divisional games. But, hey, you took 2 out of 3 from Boston. You do the same to Toronto, you'd be thrilled.
Yeah, you're good to go. Well, that's today's Around the Bases, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com.
Mets got their lineup ready, too.
Oh, you have it right now?
I have it right there.
Oh, wow. Well, let me read the the sponsor, and then you go dive right into that, baby. You ready?
I love it.
Today's starting lineup is brought to you by Nissan. Here's the Mets starting lineup against the Phillies.
All right. Batting leadoff and playing center field, Brandon Nimmo. Playing right field, batting second, will be Starling Marte. Playing shortstop, batting third, Francisco Lindor. Batting cleanup at first base is Pete Alonso. Batting fifth and playing third would be Eduardo Escobar. DHing and batting sixth, J.D. Davis. Mark Canha will be in left field, batting seventh. Luis Guillorme is batting eighth and will play second. James McCann is your catcher, batting ninth. Taiwan Walker will make his first start of the year for the Mets.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
The Yankees and the Blue Jays, a 7 o'clock start. It looks like they ditched the 6:30 starts. I'm looking throughout April, Don. And you always felt that it was a conspiracy, but all the starts are 7 o'clock, which is cool. That means I get to stay through ENN.
I mean, listen, they know what their season ticket holders want. I didn't think it made a lot of sense because just it felt like you were playing. The buildings almost seemed empty until you got to 7 o'clock.
Well, we're still going to have, just so everyone knows, though, even when Michael's staying, a lot of those 6 o'clock, you got to go on Ray Row only for the
Ray Row.
Today's
practice. One of those days, bud.
Today's one?
Yeah, because the batting practice show is at 6 o'clock on YES, pregame's at 6:30. So you have to stay right here on 98.7 to enjoy the full glory of ENN.
You know what they say, there's nothing better than a post K-Rod cast Tiger meltdown weekend ENN.
So that's the way we're going to take it, that he melted down.
By the way, congratulations to me I came closest to predicting the outcome.
Well,
after winning the football picks and now this, wow.
Well, you know, it kind of went unnoticed that I did get the Yankees lineup right on opening day.
See?
You did?
Yeah, because my pick was they just take Torres out and put DJ at second.
You're right.
Yeah!
That's why this show is the place to be. We tell you what's going on.
Yep.
That's Game Time, brought to you by Telemar Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Telemar Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's telly time. Please enjoy responsibly. All right, let's take some phone calls, huh? How about that? Let's go to Paul in Trenton. Paul?
Yeah, hi, guys. I'd like to get my comments in early. This way you can't say I said it in the middle or after. You know, this team's different. It's different. But the manager is the same, and he's managing the same way. 4 days, four different lineups. The starting pitching, who knows what they're like? They're not in there long enough to figure it out. And
they're at a pitch limit.
Oh, come on. They pitched sick there. They went under their pitch limit twice. And LeMahieu, he's sitting the bench in that game. He could have been in two or three different spots, and they never used them.
Well, they did use him. They pinch hit for him at the end of the game.
Yeah, he just the last game, the last thing. When they have runners on, what did they do? Nothing. And the one
so
other
taking
comment,
two out of three, taking two out of three is not enough for you, huh, Paul?
No, because the manager is not going to change. That's what I want. But let me make the last comment, and then that's it.
Wait, Michael, you know who I think Paul is?
Who?
I hope they lose. Right, but I don't want them to lose.
Yeah, two out of three. What do you expect to do? This
Peter.
Is baseball. This is not football. This is not basketball or hockey. You have 162 games. The objective is to take two out of three.
I just want to make my points.
You're just miserable, man.
Okay, and the last thing, and I'll end it.
All right, good.
You know what? Aaron Hicks, I've seen enough. He's done nothing for how many years? And he's continued. He left five, six guys on. You know what? Bring Gardner back.
I can't do it. Michael, I'm just going to tell you, all right? I can't.
Now I'm done.
I can't physically do it. It's not even a mental thing. It's
right.
Not laziness.
It's your body.
My body's telling me I can't do this for the next 6 months. I can't. So I don't know what to do. I know we should have a
new
meeting
job?
About it afterward. This shouldn't be something I take to the air. But Peter, I don't know what to do.
Do you think
they
we
just
should
took
ban
two
Paul?
Out of three from the hated Red Sox? We've our first phone call. I can't do it for 6 months. I can't. So I'm just telling you, I don't know how it's going to manifest itself. I don't know if I'm going to have a heart attack on the air.
Oh, no.
If I'm going to walk away.
No.
Maybe I'll take breaks during the show where you just all of a sudden.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Don't see me. I'm just going to go in the corner and play pool or take a nap. Or just take a walk around the block. But I'm just telling you, Michael, I know my body.
I'll write all the numbers down for the Capitals.
I can't do this for 6 months. No, the first phone call wasn't how Giancarlo Stanton, forget about the Henry family, he owns the Red Sox. All right? Let's not talk about they took two out of three or how great the defense has been. No. First call, complaints. Boone doesn't know what he's doing. And Hicks is leaving a small village on the base path. I can't. So I'm just telling you now, don't be shocked. I wonder why Don did that. Or where did Don go? I'm not even sure, Michael. I don't know how it's going to happen. But it's going to. I can't do it for 6 months. I can't. I won't.
He can't and he won't.
Do you think it's going to be a heart issue or brain issue?
I don't know how it's going to manifest itself. It might be something physical. It might be something mental. Some exertion at some point is going to happen. Okay, I don't know how you do it. How are you going to do it? You feel exactly the same way I do. How are you going to do it? Help me. Help me manage myself.
Help him help you.
Because you're in essence, a happy-go-lucky guy, right?
Right.
I'm miserable all the time, racked with stress every moment of the day. This is piling on. It doesn't move the meter that much. See, you go from happy-go-lucky to aggravated. I go from aggravated to aggravated.
If you tell me, forget about management, Peter, anybody, God, I'm asking you. If you said to me, Don, suck it up, then I will.
Well, I don't want to lose you physically, so I would say suck it up. Right. And
I hope
so
they
personal.
Lose.
But again, the body wants what the
words.
Body wants.
This is a guy who uttered those words that Peter so assiduously pointed out.
Thank you.
He hopes they lose. So taking 2 out of 3 against the Red Sox, not enough.
Even
not
if they
enough.
Swept them, Michael, wouldn't be enough because no Red Sox died.
Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. Joseph?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I hope everybody is well. And, Don, you look fabulous. Thank goodness.
Let's see where this goes.
One quick thing, gentlemen. You probably all saw it. Pete Alonso's backflip on Saturday afternoon or evening was an absolute disgrace. Excuse me. One of the most arrogant backflips I've ever seen in my life.
It was a grand slam.
The ball ended up in the first row. I'm sorry. That's disgraceful. This has to stop.
But
thank you,
coming.
And I hope everybody stays well.
Okay.
But, you know, one thing. First of all, Don and Peter, and I think we've all agreed, Pete Alonso is kind of awkward.
Yes.
Yes.
You said that, yeah.
I mean, during the home run derby, he's just an awkward dude. Not a bad guy. He seems like a delight, but he's awkward. He's kind of doofy. But the guy was hit in the face the previous day. He gets to hit a grand slam against a team that hit him in the face. I guess
he
wanted to show a bat flip.
And by the way, it was a little unique and cool, but it wasn't the most aggressive one I've ever seen.
It wasn't like what Tatis does.
Yeah, it wasn't, which I love how those look, honestly. But this was, come on. Guys, can we just have fun? They're playing a game. Yeah, come back to me. Back it up. Seriously, this is I don't know if the callers realize the hope they lose, stop the bad flip crowd. You guys are trying to hurt the game that you love and hope could grow and be better. Come
but
on.
But that's what you took from. Like, I don't know if he was a Met fan or a Yankee fan. If I had to guess, I would think he was a Yankee fan. But those are the first two calls we get. Both the Yankees and the Mets win their series. Got one guy wants the manager fired, Hicks gone, and we're going to complain about Alonso's bat flip, it was a scoreless tie. And what was it, the sixth? He hits a grand slam home run, his
fifth.
First ever grand slam home run, less than 24 hours after he got hit in the face. And that's what you took from it. Okay. Again, not going well.
Let's go to Cullum in the Bronx.
What's going on, Michael, Don, Peter? And Don, I just want to preference this by saying I am one of those fans that I'm not crazy about the Yankees and I demand championships. In my entire life, they've been over 500. My entire life, they compete for championships outside of a year or two. That's all I need. I'm fine with that. But okay. I got 2 points that I would like to make, and I got questions for Michael. How often do we see that supersized outfield? Because personally, I think that's the best lineup they could possibly put out there. You don't lose anything defensively. You could keep Kiner Falefa out there. You could DH either LeMahieu or Donaldson or even Rizzo. And it's the best of both worlds. How often do you think we see that? And to be honest, I really can't stand Gallo. And if he's not hot, he is in the playoffs when it matters. He's so streaky. He is a liability if he's not hot. I don't know what to do with him.
Well, the full house outfield, you'll probably see that at most 3 times a week because that's how far they want to push Stan. It does open up a lot of things for Boone to be able to use them. And it gets Hicks out of the lineup. And Aaron Judge happens to be a really good center fielder. It's a positive thing, but again, you don't want to you don't want Stanton to break down. So I think you see that three times a week. As for Gallo, of all the guys on the team that you felt needed to start off well, it was Joey, and he's 1 for 10. Now Aaron Boone, all about the positives, said he likes his at bats. 1 for 10, 5 balls hit over 97 miles an hour exit velocity. So hitting the ball hard, hit a ball hard against the wall on Saturday, got thrown out of second trying to go for a double. But listen, he hit 166 when he became a Yankee last year. He hit 199 on the season. You know, this is the player that he is. I mean, you can't expect it. It's not fair to expect him to be anything else. He's about a 200, 210 hitter who's going to strike out over 200 times, and he's going to walk over 110 times. He's going to have high on-base percentage. So if that doesn't float your boat, then you're going to be upset with him. But in this world where they value the three true outcomes, he's like the poster child for that. And I know he's going to rub people the wrong way because the strikeouts bother people. Did you hear the stat that Alex gave yesterday that I had never heard before? Never in the history of baseball has a team won a championship with the guy who struck out 200 times or more.
Really?
Now, I couldn't believe it.
That's wild.
Reggie never struck out over 200?
Nope.
Any of those? Wow.
Isn't that a great stat?
But that's got to change because...
Well, that was my comeback to Alice as well. I mean, in this day and age, it's going to change. He goes, hasn't changed yet. And the Yankees, you know, when they, like Judge, Stanton, and Gallo, that's 3, 4, and 5 in their lineup. Now, Judge and Stanton both cut down on their strikeouts last year, but that's essentially 600 strikeouts, 3, 4, and 5. 600. So that's the way the team is built. So if you don't like Joey Gallo, I don't know if you're ever going to love him because that's the player that he is. I'm sorry. That's just the player he is.
How about this? Reggie never struck out more than 200 times.
He led the league a lot, but not.
He led the league 5 times. His highest strikeout was 171, and that was essentially his rookie year in 1968. He struck out 161 times in 71 when they won, and then he led the league in 156 in California towards the end of his career in 82. So, never really even came close.
How many strikeouts did he have for his career, Don?
2,597, which is the most in baseball history.
Well, it's funny. He jokes about it. He said essentially he did not hit the ball for 5 years. Because you say 500, give him 500 at-bats a season. He did not hit the ball for five years of his career.
Yeah, so nobody has struck out more than him.
But he did okay. All right, we'll come back.
If he played now, he'd easily strike out 200. If all he cared about was the home run?
No, I believe that he'd be a contact hitter in today's game. 150 you sign up for.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Time for Diamond Notes on the Michael K. Show, brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop at London Jewelers. Here's my complaint or worry about this Yankee roster.
Go ahead.
Peter, you know I hate the phrase good problems. Oh, it's a good problem to have. Well, a problem is a problem. There shouldn't be a good in front of it. Now, it's not somebody dying, but it's an issue. And the issue that the Yankees have is that they have 8 positions to play. I'm saying 4 infield, 3 outfield, and DH. And they have 9 people to play those positions. So what you're doing by constructing the team this way is you're putting Aaron Boone in the unenviable situation of having to make a tough decision every single day. He's a big boy. He gets paid a lot of money. I'm not saying that he can't do it, but he has to tick off a player every single day. He didn't start Gleyber Torres on opening day because he wanted to start DJ LeMahieu. You think Gleyber Torres was happy? No, he wasn't. He didn't start DJ LeMahieu yesterday. Brought him as a pinch hitter. Today, it's Josh Donaldson. And what I mean is, You can't have nine guys who think that they're everyday players shoehorned into eight positions. No. Every single day, you are going to tick somebody off, and there's going to be a tension created by that. You need more players like Marwin Gonzalez, who realizes what he is. And when he doesn't play, he realizes my job is to be a fill-in. But when you've got guys that throughout the history of their career have played every day that they're healthy, and now once every 8 days, one of them is going to sit, it creates tension that's not needed. And it puts the manager in a situation to have to be the bad guy every single day. I think it's awkward. I think you got to get rid of one of these players that is quote-unquote an everyday player.
So we need to read a little bit more into the comment that Aaron made about when we had him on that first time to announce that he was going to be a weekly.
Right.
Then I asked him, how are you going to get DJ LeMahieu 500 at-bats? He's like, it's not going to be a problem. How could it not be a problem? Because you do the math, Michael. If he spells everybody in the infield except shortstop, third, second, first, that's 57 games, right? And he'll DH another, you know, dozen or so probably. Then you're still around 70. He doesn't play the outfield, right? He's not going to catch. So how are you supposed to get 500 bats unless he knows that at some point something's going to happen? Whether somebody's going to get traded or somebody's going to flat out lose their job. There's no way that DJ can replace everybody and get 500 at-bats. It's just it's mathematically impossible.
No, but I think he will, Don, and somebody's going to be ticked off time.
But somebody is not going to get 500 at-bats. You see what I'm saying? I mean, there's not enough games. So maybe it puts Torres on notice. Listen, you're going to have a better year because you might lose your job, and DJ might be the everyday second baseman. Maybe he anticipates, you know, Donaldson's going to go on the DL for 60 days, and he's going to play third base for 60 days. I mean, or Connor Falefa is going to get hurt. But if he can confidently say he's going to get 500 at-bats, that means somebody is expecting to be a full-time player that's not. So who is that? And I think the guy is probably Torres.
I don't think it can be Torres. He's too good.
Well, but he could still get traded.
Well, maybe. But my point is, teams that are successful, everybody knows what their role is. Like the Yankee championship teams of the 90s, Strawberry knew he wasn't an everyday player anymore. He was cool with it.
Right.
Tim Raines knew he wasn't an everyday player anymore. He was cool with it. Andy Fox knew what his job was. Homer Bush knew what his job was. Now, you think Josh Donaldson is happy about being out today? Unless he's hurt, and I don't think he is. You think that we know that Glaber wasn't on opening day. You're going to tick off a guy who's used to playing every single day because you have to make a decision in roster building. You need your Marwin Gonzalez's. You need the guys who said, this is my job, this is what I do. But every single game, Aaron Boone's going to piss somebody off. Everyone.
Well, and worse than that, you're not pissing off one. You're pissing off a rotation of a bunch of them.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So every day it's somebody new.
None of them are happy.
And then what do you do if you're fortunate enough to get into the playoffs, right? Now you have a series. You know, so they catch the break where it's not the one and done, where you're going to have to sit somebody down and tell them that their season might be over because you may not play in a one and done game. But in a series, are you going to tell a starter that you're not going to play every game, that there's going to be playoff games? So think about that, Michael. It's one thing in the regular season. It's one thing in April. But when you've contributed to a regular season in which this team is going to be able to go play in the playoffs – how do you tell that guy you're not playing? You're not playing in a potential elimination game. You're not playing in a potential game seven. You know, you might not get introduced in the starting lineup game one of the World Series. Now, those are nice problems to have because that means you went pretty far, but still, you're going to tick somebody off, and we'll see how they deal with it. And you'll especially tick people off if you're losing. They might live with it when you're winning. But if they start to lose, Michael, then it can be a real problem.
And the way Aaron explains it, you know, I sat them all down and explained it to, okay, that's cool. Doesn't mean that they liked it. And if anybody's able to do this, it's Aaron Boone because his people skills are off the charts. But why put him in that position? Pick a guy that you don't think should be here and trade him. And then bring in a guy who is supposed to come off the bench and realizes it. And I'll tell you what, they'll be cheaper too. Marwin Gonzalez only makes $1 million. And he's happy as a clam. That's his job. But Josh Donaldson makes $25 million a year, and he's sitting tonight. Why? because that's the way the roster's constructed. You're putting your manager in a situation where there's going to be stress and it doesn't need to be.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Obi Toppin really showed. Two straight games, he broke his career high. What impressed me is that in the last 20 games of the season, he turned into a somewhat reliable three-point shooter. Before that, it was laughable how bad he was. And he even admitted that when he hits the three, it opens up everything for him. Because if he's open in the corner, the defense has to come charging at him, and then that opens up the move that he could just drive the baseline and slam the ball home. He's got talent.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, the only way that you're going to play him the minutes he needs, if you keep Julius Randle, is if Julius Randle plays the five and the Knicks go with a small lineup. And Thibodeau doesn't like to do that. He said it hurts you defensively. But they also are better offensively, so maybe they'll outscore teams. And then you put in size and a rim protector at certain points of the game. But, I mean, Toppin showed, guys, I don't know if you agree, that more playing time is going to do this guy well. When he's not looking over his shoulder and worried about being taken out of the game, he can play a little bit.
I got to tell you, I'm starting to think, you guys may disagree, that talking about the way Tibbs does things is going to be a relic, or it needs to be. Mm-hmm. If he wants to continue to coach here, this idea that it all has to be the way he operates. He doesn't love to play young guys. He doesn't love to play certain lineups, play a certain style. Dude, he's getting another chance at this next year. They have to immediately to be able to compete with whatever it is that they have. So, Don, I hope that what Michael's saying in terms of his preferences with how to use Toppin is out the window next year.
Yeah, you hope that he would kind of conform. He's getting the opportunity based on, you don't want to judge him on this year because of how good last year was. But let's not forget, guys, and I'm a fan of Thibodeau. Don't get me wrong. But he doesn't come in here with any rings jingling or jangling, all right? This isn't Riley. This isn't Jackson. This isn't even, you know, Spoelstra or Doc Rivers. I mean, this is a guy that's had good seasons. He's been a really good coach. But, you know, why do they have to adjust to him? Maybe he needs to adjust to the way the game is played and take advantage of the players that he has here. And Peter's right, Michael. Why are you forcing, well, this is the way he does things? Well, the way he does things has made him a good coach, not a great coach, not a championship coach. He did some good things in Chicago, and he got teams to overachieve. But if he's going to be here for this team turning a corner, it's got to be a little bit about how do I make my players play better and adapt to their game than force-feeding the way he does things.
And what happened, when you look back at this Knicks season, really what it comes down to, Michael, what happened between basically the middle of January and March? What happened during that stretch? Yeah, it ended like March 4th was when was the end of their seven-game losing streak. And they'd won like one out of whatever, 11 or 12 games. What happened during that span? Because if you get rid of that entire span, if they had played 500 basketball through that instead of losing everything, we could have been talking about them in the 10 seed, the 9 seed, at least competing. But they completely disappeared during crunch time of the season.
I think the thing that you have to look at with the Knicks, although the numbers do not indicate that he was terrible, it was a big drop off from, you know, second team All-NBA to what Julius Randle was this year. And not only that, forget about the output. He didn't hit the three-pointers the way he did the year before, so that takes away a big part of his game. He also seemed like he was pouting, and he was a bit of a malcontent. I think that brings the team down. I think, you know, the fact that he couldn't play the last couple of games, I think it opened up these kids. It really does. It allowed them to play free and not worry about it, because when you have an alpha dog like Julius Randle expects to take the big shot, always handling the basketball, I think it slows the offense down to a crawl.
Well, Peter's right, Michael. They finished 6 out of the 10 seed. Now, listen, they had a nice, you know, 7-3 run the final 10 games. Was that because it didn't mean anything anymore? But, yeah, there were stretches, Michael, where they were just god-awful. If they were just average, they're probably a playoff team.
Now, we finally heard from the Invisible Man.
That's right.
Yeah, Leon Rose sat down with our good friend Mike Breen on MSG. And Leon, the president of basketball operations of the Knicks, was asked by Mike, why didn't the team make the playoffs?
I feel as though, you know, it's been a disappointing season from the standpoint of wins and losses. And, you know, we are going to, you know, take a good hard look at it after the season, you know, to evaluate, you know, everything that's going on. I think that, you know, just the first year, things clicked. And this year, you know, from the beginning, things didn't click. We faced adversity. And, you know, we had some tough stretches.
Now, Mike asked him, did Randall tell you he still loves being here?
Julius loves it here in New York, wants to be in New York, and yeah.
Yeah.
that and also Mike asked him, are you going to talk more? The fans want to hear from you.
I appreciate that, and I want to please the fans. That's, you know, very much important to me, important to this organization from the standpoint of giving them something they can be proud of, they can root for, they can feel good about. You know, anything I can do to contribute to that, I want to do it.
So there you have it. The guy doesn't talk much, and when he talks to Mike Breen. That's how I am. That's my theory in life. I don't talk much off the air except to Mike Breen.
That's right.
Yeah, because you can trust Mike Breen.
Well, and the one thing, too, Michael, you know, it was a disappointing season by the record standpoint. Well, that's it. Let's not try to make
keep score.
This is not, you know, this was not a season where you want to dissect all the positives. You can't get over the negative of a team that was a 4 seed last year and expected to take that next step among the elite teams and then drop to the 11th seed in the conference and finishing, you know, 8 games under 500. I mean, yeah, it was a disappointment all around. It was a disappointment from, I think, your coach. I think it was a disappointment from your superstar player. And it was a disappointment, yeah, in the record.
And they'll try to find some
positives, Peter. But overall, this was a hugely disappointing season.
Well, and disappointing for him and Worldwide West. I mean, let's just be honest. No matter how you cut it, and we feel bad saying it because he's a nice guy, Kemba Walker is one of the all-time swings and misses. I mean, listen, fortunately they didn't risk a lot. It's not like they spent a ton of money. But, guys, that was an absolute failure. It couldn't have gone worse.
And Fournier wasn't great. He ended up breaking the three-point mark for the Knicks, but he wasn't a great player for them. He was inconsistent.
Hey, no. Guys, this was supposed to be the year that the Knicks were going to show that they could be a destination.
Bing bong!
And it's like you built the frame of a house, and it's just as you're ready to start to finish it, everything crumbled around. You're almost back to square one. They may disagree with this, but just from how you feel about the Knicks, it feels like before last year. Like, will free agents want to come here? Who are you going to have to play with? You know, so now you're going to have to really rely on the draft or make some kind of big splash in a trade, because I don't know if this is any more attractive than it was before last season. Last season was supposed to be the building block to changing the image of this team. And now you follow it up with this?
Let's go to John in Westchester. Johnny.
Mike, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You got
it. I want to talk about, it's not even an emergence, but I want to talk about Obi Toppin. This kid is special. He deserves all the praise and recognition that he's gotten these last few weeks. And I think a lot of people forget that this kid was National Player of the Year and earned Dayton a 1 seed when he was in college. He was a 40% three-point shooter and was a pick-and-roll machine. He was Amari Stoudemire 2.0. Not was, is. And he was completely misused this entire year, and I think Tibbs needs to take some accountability for it. He keeps talking about practice and things that we don't see, but everything that I see on the court and in the game indicates that this guy is a future star. He was a plus-minus of 120 this year. He is a plus-120. Randall was a minus 164. He was completely misused, and it's absolutely outrageous. This kid is going to be an all-star, and he needs to be our starting power forward. They need to build the team around him.
Well, what would you do then with Randall? Would you move him to the center spot and play with a small lineup or get rid of Randall?
To be honest with you, I think I would get rid of Randall at this point. His attitude is just – he's really turned a lot of fans off. I think that I would try and go out and flip him and a few picks for a point guard, and I would build around quickly Barrett and Obi Toppin with a solidified point guard, whoever we can get, whether that's Brogdon, maybe it's Jalen Brunson. But that's the direction that I'm thinking.
Well, it's interesting, John, because I think Thibodeau came in here with the mindset and the reputation he doesn't like to play young players. There's a team that had young players. Huh. I mean, they're dealing in the currency of draft picks. So that's not a good fit. Now, the first year it worked because pedal to the metal, they got in the playoffs. That's what the Knicks needed, to change the culture. But then you buried Toppin and you buried quickly in big moments. No. It's hard to play basketball looking over your shoulder. And also, Thibodeau is one of these coaches. He's like a taskmaster when it comes to defense in a league that doesn't play any defense. You have to score points.
That's why Peter said, is he a relic? And I asked earlier in the season, not that I think he deserves to get fired off of this year, but I think the question should be asked, is he the right coach for this team? If they're going to be playing younger players and kind of just feeding off of what you saw at the end of this year and not trying to be an elite team right away like they thought they were at the end of last season, is he the right coach for this?
Well, time's going to tell I think it changed a little bit too when the front office told him you have to play the younger players. And I think they played better when the younger players played.
Yeah. Now, he's a good enough coach. Will he realize that and adapt? Kind of like great comparison, like what Tom Coughlin did with the Giants.
It's a great comparison. It is a great. That's what he has to do. He has to have a diametric change of his thinking.
Now, the reason I didn't think it was an apples to apples, just because it wasn't Coughlin coaching, it was just his style, like in the room and all that. But still, just hey, he's a good coach. Adapt here. You got younger players. Take advantage of them. Let's ease off on the defense. Let's accentuate the offense. Let's try to win the way the game is played right now.
Real quick though, Michael, do you think that call we got earlier a few minutes ago, is Brogdon or Brunson a player of that level with Barrett, quickly and Toppin enough of a team to compete?
No, you need a big star.
You still need a star. You're removing Randall, who's the closest thing you have to a star, problematic or not, and I don't hear any of those things being a piece that's a star piece.
Yeah. That's
very hopeful for Toppin and RJ, and they both have potential, but you cannot say we're sure that either one of those guys is an every night star next year.
That's why Donovan Mitchell is a perfect get, because he's a star and he can play point. That's why he's great. So you solve two problems at once. Now, speaking of coaches, Frank Vogel of the Lakers gets fired today. Wasn't his fault that LeBron made them get Russell Westbrook.
He gone.
Wasn't his fault that Anthony Davis was hurt for most of the year. Wasn't his fault that toward the end, when they need to win games, LeBron's knee hurt. But the thing that I find really distasteful, guys, Woj, our very own Woj, reported that Vogel was getting fired. Vogel had no idea about it. Classless by the Lakers. Classless.
Yeah, how can that happen?
Somebody said to him, it's being reported that you're going to be fired. He said, nobody's told me bleep. You lead the guy. That's just not a way to do business, man.
And I know it was meaningless, Michael, but if you saw that game yesterday, they win the game in overtime. They got a bunch of kids playing. It was kind of like a feel-good end to the season, which was a miserable season. And he can't even get 2 minutes to enjoy it. The first question in the post-game press conference is about the report. That's not the way that your coach should find out that he's gone.
That's awful. It's awful. They should be ashamed of themselves. Jeannie Buss should reevaluate what's going on in that front office that a reporter will find out before the guy who's getting fired finds out.
And remember, this is a guy who did win them a title.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, things were bad this year, don't get me wrong, but again, this is another situation where it's a perfect storm of the front office and the coaching and the players that came together. That whole thing wasn't a wreck because of Frank Vogel.
No.
He wasn't good enough to make it work. But, I mean, come on. And, by the way, let's see how things go next year. They're not going to be able to do anything, basically, at the top of that rotation. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do next year with basically the same group of stars and whatever other pieces they can put together.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to get rid of Westbrook. So that's going to be a huge difference. They have to get rid of Westbrook.
I don't know if they can.
They will, because it's an expiring $44 million contract. So somebody will take him just for that contract. So there'll be a new team. But to me, this is on LeBron. And you know I'm a LeBron fan, but he's the one who engineered the deal for Westbrook when they could have had other players. I was talking to Stephen A. yesterday. They had DeMar DeRozan. The deal was done. But then Westbrook appealed to LeBron. He said, listen, dude, I want to be there. And LeBron made it happen. Blame LeBron. Don't blame Frank Vogel. But I guess you can't fire LeBron, nor would you want to.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
I have not figured out the Nets. I don't know what they're going to do in the playoffs. I have no idea. But they did win the games they had to win. They won down the stretch. They're a tough team to watch because when you have two great players on the team, you would think that they'd be more aesthetically pleasing. They're not an aesthetically pleasing team to watch. They're sloppy. It's almost like grunt basketball. They fall behind. Or they pull ahead, and then they let the team come all the way back. It's just not pretty to watch. But what I've seen, I've watched a lot of their games recently. It seems like Kevin and Kyrie don't dominate the same game. Like, one of them has a great game, one of them has a pedestrian game. That's what happened, like, the last five games. I think they both have to dominate in order for them to win. Now, the Nets did get some good news, though. There's a possibility that we could see Simmons. And if we see Simmons, I think that changes the entire equation. So this is Stephen A. Smith on Countdown yesterday about the Simmons situation.
And I'm saying to you that if Ben Simmons can give you 25 a game, looking the way he looked, now, I mean, he could shoot as poorly as he does, have struggles at the free throw line. If that athleticism, that playmaking ability, and that defender that he is,
love to see it.
It shows up for 25 minutes, which it won't, I don't believe. But if it did, Brooklyn Nets going to the finals.
Oh, yeah, that's why you trade
Brooklyn Nets going to the finals.
Now, here's Woj talking about the Nets' hopes and dreams with Simmons.
If he continues pain-free the way he has and progresses, listen, there's optimism around the Nets that they can get him back in the first round of their Eastern Conference playoff series if they advance out of the play-in. Mm. Even if it's just 10 or 15 minutes a game, they will take whatever they can get from Ben Simmons. Now, of course, that's contingent on him continuing to be pain-free, and he's got plenty more to ramp up to. The chance to get Ben Simmons back, even in a very limited role, is real in the first round of these playoffs if he can continue to stay pain-free.
And finally, here's Tim Legler on with Greeny talking about what Simmons means to the Nets.
Can they legitimately contend for a title? I think it would be difficult without getting something out of Ben Simmons because he addresses two things they need. He creates offense for their role players, and he can guard anybody on the floor. And this is one of the most porous defensive teams that you're going to see. And if you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you've got a chance to outscore people every night, certainly. But more likely to do that in the regular season, because in the postseason series, when one of those two teams you mentioned, Boston and Miami, two exceptional defensive teams, can hone in just on those two guys for seven straight games, if over a two-week period, each game, it could become more difficult for them to be as good offensively. So you have to figure out another way that you might have to win. Ben Simmons can do that for them. So if they get 15, 18, 20, 25 minutes out of Ben Simmons in that series, it makes them more of a threat as you go forward.
Peter, don't you think that's asking a lot of a guy who essentially hasn't played since last June? Now you're going to get 25 really good minutes out of him?
I
can't physically see it happening.
Me neither. I think they'll be I've said this for a while. The Nets will have to treat Simmons like this is the middle of the regular season, and you're easing him in game by game. You see if you can get 5 minutes from him, you see if you get 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then maybe, this is assuming he comes either in the play-in or they said not the play-in, so it would be in the beginning of the playoffs, that then if that's true, if it's in the first series and they're able to go on a run, then by the conference finals, maybe he's really playing. But I can't see how you can get 25 from him right away. If that was the case, why wouldn't he already have been playing?
Right. Yeah, because the play-in is this week. And by the way, every Nets game, you can see a Nets post game either on Yes or on the Yes app. So follow your team that way. But bottom line, Peter, you'd think he'd be easing in right now at 10 minutes. You'd think, okay, so they beat the Cavaliers in the play-in game. Then they're going to play the Celtics, and all of a sudden Ben Simmons is going to show up for 25 minutes a game. Yeah, wake me when that happens.
Now, they catch you a little bit of a break as far as the schedule is concerned, because if they win the game against Cleveland, they don't have to worry about playing another game, right? So they got the game
until like
home.
Saturday.
Play Tuesday. I'm looking at the schedule. Game one would be Sunday.
Sunday. Wow.
So I don't know if that would be in the afternoon because there's four games on Sunday, so it could be like a 3 o'clock start. But the point is, if you can wrap things up on Tuesday, guys, and then not have to play in Boston until Sunday, that's probably as long a break as they've had since the All-Star.
Right.
And I don't know if Simmons can get back in that time. But I just worry, guys, you go 25 minutes a game to go from not playing for 17, 18 months and then jump right into the speed and intensity of a best-of-seven series against a two-seed in Boston. It's playing – look what they did to get the two-seed, right, Peter? Playing great basketball down the stretch. That's a lot to ask a player. You're asking them to get hurt is what you're asking them.
Peter, let's say they beat the Cavaliers. Do you like their chances against the Celtics?
You know, I really don't know what to make of the Celtics, especially because the Celtics won't get back Robert Williams till like the third round of the playoffs if they were to go, maybe this end of the second round. So the Celtics are a little bit weak in the middle defensively. The Celtics have been very good. They've been the best team in the East the last, 6 weeks? So I like the Celtics' chance against anyone, but at the same time, if the Nets get rolling, it makes me a little bit nervous.
But you would admit of the three teams they could have played, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, or Boston, you take Boston.
I think so. As good as the Celtics have been, I still think so, yes.
You agree, Michael, or no?
I think so. Because if they lose this one and then they win the other game, they would play Miami. So I think if I'm the Nets, I'd rather play Boston than Miami, right?
Yeah, I think so. Just historically, when you look at what the teams perform like in the playoffs, I would say so. But listen, it's not a great – I don't think you're thrilled given what you've been this season. I still think the Nets are, unless we see a huge change, they're still going to be a slight underdog against Boston.
I don't know, bud. I don't know.
I bet you Vegas has them favored.
No, you're right. Vegas, you're right. Technically, you're probably correct. I personally believe they'd be the underdog.
I forgot to tell you guys one thing. So I did the K-Rod cast yesterday.
Sure.
And today, reading through some of the mentions, somebody out there actually said, what's the deal with K? He's so jacked. Is he on roids? I mean, I couldn't have been happier. Because jacked I ain't.
No, that's just somebody that can't see. You're physically fit. Jacked is not a way I would describe you.
That's strong.
And you had a jacket on. Do you know how jacked you have to be able to see through a sports coat?
You're right.
By the way, I still stand by Don. I think Michael shouldn't go sports coat for this.
Well, he was in a tough spot because A-Rod casual – people show up to weddings like that.
That's the thing. Does A-Rod know casual? Does he have any idea how to do casual?
Well, he had a sweater on. What do you want him to do?
But
a tight top?
The way he looks with the sweater and the collar coming out of it is basically formal. You put on a jacket and you could visit the queen.
I think I'm going to stay with the jacket.
You don't watch ball games in a jacket.
The queen of England knocked on my... I'm wearing a jacket tonight. I'm doing a game and a tie. Yeah,
but the whole idea is that this is two buddies watching a game. An announcer and a superstar athlete just shooting the breeze, watching a game. The way the set is, just kind of like lay back. You really should have almost like lazy boys. Your feet should be up.
Maybe you know what? Let's think about this as we go to break. Maybe do it nude.
Then we'll be able to find out how jacked you are.
But then you just blur out all the naughty bits and you're good to go. I took out the happy organ.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.